Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio for Europe Liberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio for Europe Liberties media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. After long and consistent denial, Tajikistan finally admitted that there are indeed COVID-19 cases in the country, and as we speak, there are 15 people who are tested positive. While Tajikistan confirming, Turkmenistan remains in denial about it. But the way these two countries in Central Asia have been treating this pandemic, similarities couldn't be more striking. Now the question is, how much do we really know about the extent of the problem and its impact? How to read what the authorities have or have not been saying, and what to look for going forward? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Peter Leonard, Central Asia editor of the EurasiaNet, Surojiddin Tolibov, managing editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties Tajik Service, Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Welcome on board, colleagues. It was not intentional, but all speakers turned out to be Central Asia editors today. So thank you, colleagues, for joining us. Let's start with Tajikistan, Surojiddin. So Tajikistan finally admitted that it has COVID-19 patients, and there are 15 of them. So what did they say, and what do you make of it?
You see, it took 1 month, more than a month, to admit that indeed there are COVID cases in Tajikistan. Over the last months, our referrals Tajik service, known as OZOD, has numerous times reported of mysterious death and secret burials across the country. And each time, health authorities have angrily accused us and other independent media on causing panic by spreading fake news. Officially, there were no coronavirus in the country at all. Authorities said that there were pneumonia cases, and then argued that pneumonia cases were, in fact, fewer than the previous years, even the last year. But amid reports of many mysterious deaths and secret burials, no one believed them. So ordinary people were reading all of these reports, and there were a lot of concerns. So confusing situation further was that the World Health Organization's representative inside Tajikistan have backed up the official position, government's assessments of the situation. Yesterday, at last, government suddenly admitted that there were coronavirus cases. I think it is happening because WHO's representative's official delegation is sending a crew to Tajikistan. So ahead of the visit, authorities suddenly closed all schools, secondary schools, kindergartens, suspended football matches, championship as well, banned group gatherings. And now yesterday they said that all citizens must wear the medical masks as well. And they're asking elders to stay in.
Okay. Peter, you know, you have been closely watching this development in Tajikistan. So in your opinion, one thing is that, as Rajuddin said, that the WHO's delegation is expected in Tajikistan. But other than that, what changed that authorities decided to confirm what was in fact known for some time?
Yes, you know, I think there is a kind of a bigger story to be told here. And I think this is a kind of the governance and accountability crisis that Tajikistan has been enduring for decades now, because from the very first moment that it became clear that Tajikistan might be facing a problem, and we're talking about many weeks ago, I mean, the very first suspicious death, which was possibly linked to coronavirus, was back in the end of March. So we're talking about, you know, more than a month ago that this happened. The policy has been to deny and to pin all of these, to attribute all of these deaths to some other cause. And in a way, it doesn't really make sense. There's something sort of rather illogical to my mind about this, because it seems to me that when you have a crisis, you would think that you would immediately admit you have a crisis so that, you know, you can receive help from foreign donors and governments, as Tajikistan has done in the past. But the way that Tajikistan works, until the president himself admits that there's a problem, so the vertical of power is so strong and so rigid that until the message comes from the very top that we have a problem, then nobody below can admit it. And so they've been operating in this kind of bizarre sort of fiction. And not just that, you know, I'm the first to sort of criticize the WHO and how they've handled the situation in Tajikistan. But I think it's important to note, back in the middle of March, they sent a letter to the president's office in which, at some considerable detail, they said to him, please avoid having mass events. And what does he do 10 days later? He has a mass event in which more than 12,000 people participated in the north of Tajikistan. And for all that we know, this may have been, potentially have spread this virus even more than it would have been already. So Tajikistan has a coronavirus problem and a crisis, which is now going to have to confront, but it has a much deeper and longer problem, which is about governance. And now this bad governance is going to prove even more fatal than it has done already. Mm-hmm. And this is should be a matter for deep anxiety and alarm. Mm-hmm.
Bruce, I also wondered your thoughts on specifically on the question of what changed that they decided to confirm these cases.
Well, I mean, it's hard to read the minds of certainly President Rahman. You know, I mean, I've seen people wonder if it wasn't the case that the situation on the ground is actually so bad now, and they're aware of it, that it's just going to be impossible to cover it up. You know, and so they figured they were going to have to say sometime or another, because it really is becoming obvious. You know, Peter mentioned they were attributing this to something else. I mean, you know, I've seen more reports of death from pneumonia, as Sirojuddin also said, in the last few weeks than I ever remember seeing from that place. And I know Tajik authorities said, no, we crunched the numbers for you, and it's no higher than it was last year. But I don't know. There's a lot of reports about that, and there's a lot of strange circumstances that accompany these deaths too. People showing up in hazmat suits with the body and helping to bury it right away. It just didn't look good. It was so obvious to everyone outside that it was 99.9% coronavirus there. You know, but the Tajik government just kept refusing, and they're going to look foolish. And if, you know, as Peter said, they're welcoming and organizing mass gatherings. If this backfires on them, they got a real problem, because they not only didn't they take the right measures, but they actually knowingly took the wrong measures, you know.
These massive rallies you are talking about. So Sirojuddin, yesterday, in the absence of credible information, especially when it is so obvious that the authorities are trying to conceal the information from public, rumors take the front seat. The last rumor was about President Rahman's absence from public. Is he back?
He still is absent. But we have persistent but unconfirmed reports that somebody from his family allegedly is sick, but we don't know if it's true or not. But these rumors are going around and very persistently. And furthermore, we know that the closest friend of president's son is also being hospitalized with high temperature and with pneumonia. And apart from that, we also hear that his family, president's family, including his son, in quarantine now, self-isolation. So these are only rumors, but, you know, we are hearing it from the sources close to the government.
You know, this also tells us that it's indeed turning into something that they couldn't hide the problem anymore, as you said earlier, Peter. So what's the extent of the problem now that they say 15 cases? Is it really 15 cases?
I have to say the number seems strange and sort of plucked out of the air. I mean, it's very odd. And when you compare it to countries like Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, when they started announcing cases, first they announced one case and then they announced, you know, more cases. And that's how you expect these sorts of things to be discovered. You don't just simply discover 15 cases in one day all of a sudden. So, you know, the way that the number was kind of produced seems extremely suspicious. Now, the fact is, if they were being truthful and the 15 had been suddenly discovered in one day, then what they've got is they've discovered it very late, and this whole thing may have kind of got way out of control. I think it has got out of control, but, you know, they've kind of trapped themselves in this strange sort of cycle of lies. So, we can only speculate about how wide it has spread, but the fact that they have introduced no lockdown mechanisms, they've kind of very stop and start manner, they try to introduce some kind of precautionary measures. At one point, they kind of ordered the mosques to close, and then they ordered them to reopen and that type of thing. And so the lack of measures suggests that indeed this may have spread quite widely among the population, and that is another thing to be worried about. I mean, I would just like to add to the point about the president himself. To be exact, I mean, he did make an appearance yesterday, I mean, in a kind of closed chamber with his kind of most trusted kind of lieutenants. And it was a very strange meeting in that it was him in a kind of in this kind of closed room, and all of the officials were all seated in this kind of hall, and they had one seat between one another to kind of ensure social distancing. And there was something kind of bitterly ironic about this image, because these are the very kind of sort of precautions that the leadership of the country should have been giving to its population, but only now are they beginning to kind of send these public images, and that just shows how disastrous the public information kind of strategy has been.
Yeah, Peter, there was also a question about whether the images that you have seen on TV, whether they are indeed taken yesterday, or that it's alleged to be taken.
In Tajikistan, everything is possible.
We also supposed to talk about Turkmenistan, Bruce. So in Tajikistan, authorities finally started acknowledging that there is an issue which needs dealing. But in Turkmenistan, authorities continue to remain in denial. So what do we know? What's happening there?
You summed it up there. I mean, they continue to remain in denial. I think, especially with Tajikistan admitting yesterday that they have cases, Turkmenistan is even at the best of times, they look pretty foolish. But right now, they've even outdone themselves. To be sitting, with a border on Iran, which is one of the most affected countries by this pandemic, in the middle of March, more than 100,000 Afghan refugees left Iran and came back into Afghanistan in Herat and places that border Turkmenistan. Uzbekistan has it. Kazakhstan has it. And here's this one place that doesn't have it officially. They don't report it. I mean, no one believes it, and it defies logic to figure out why they just won't admit this. You know, I mean, the Turkmen government is even worse than the Tajik government, is that they're like in a fantasy world or something. You know, they just don't admit to, even when it's obvious to everyone, they won't admit stuff. But this one, it's really tough to say what they hope to get out of this. It just undercuts their credibility, and that's saying something, because they don't have much credibility to begin with. But they've really plumbed new depths with this one.
Yeah, I think maybe we will talk about this a little bit later, the management of this issue. I mean, especially talking about Tajikistan. We have seen earlier when the ISIS fighters claimed of sort of attack, and then authorities started accusing those people to be Islamic Party's member, and then changed the narrative, and then admitted that they were Islamic State fighters indeed. So, again, we are seeing this kind of disastrous information management here too. And finally, they are admitting, which was really known number of weeks ago. So talking about Turkmenistan, just to continue, maybe Bruce, with you, or Peter, you might wish to jump in here if you like. So the authorities are not admitting the existence of any such case in the country, but they have been receiving aids from at least from U.S. I think they missed European aid, but they did receive like something $920,000, which was directed to the pandemic. So they have been also shutting off the air corridors. So any thoughts? What's thinking there in terms of this their strategy about this pandemic? Now we are talking about Turkmenistan.
Look, I mean, Turkmenistan is obviously, as always, you guys are providing the very little reporting there is in the country. So certainly are better qualified than me to respond to on these issues. But the only thing I would say, the one thing that obviously has kind of helped Turkmenistan in this situation is when you isolate yourself to that extent, it becomes very easy to kind of shut down your country from kind of, they acted actually very quickly. I mean, it was back in January, unless I'm mistaken, that they began to kind of impose travel bans. So I'm sure that has been useful in slowing the rate of infection, if the infection has happened. But the ultimate problem here is, I mean, as I was saying before, I think is very similar to Tajikistan. There was a whole kind of that whole brief moment in which we weren't certain if Turkmenistan was even allowed to say the word coronavirus. Yeah. And it was a fair kind of point to make, because this is a country in which if the president does not say a word, then nobody else is allowed to say that word. Mm. And that's how Turkmenistan operates. And that is their strategy. They are simply pretending that they don't have a problem. And they hope that if they pretend for long enough, the problem will simply go away on its own.
That is one thing, the way authorities behave, Peter. And on the other hand, there was a tweet the other day from a Western ambassador in Turkmenistan. I'm not naming him deliberately here. So tweet was saying something in the line of, indeed, Turkmenistan looks COVID-19 free at this stage. And then the other day, there was a picture which I've seen on the Twitter account of UN coming out of Ashgabat. So UN diplomats were speaking to dozens of Turkmen students, where you could clearly see that there is no social distancing rules applied and no face masks were seen. So how do you make of that type of behavior? I mean, okay, on one hand, Turkmen authorities, we know from what point of view they are talking about, but then you also see some of the representative of Western world saying, doing things, which really kind of interesting.
I don't even know how to comment to that. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, the pictures were just shocking. Quite honestly, there's no other word for it. And, you know, these international organizations, whenever you speak to their representatives, usually off the record, you know, they explain to you the difficulties of working in a country like Turkmenistan or Tajikistan. And you have to understand, you know, that these certain sort of compromises you have to make or the rules you have to play to keep the authorities happy. I get it. I understand. I don't agree, but I understand that. But that thing that you're describing, and it is indeed, if it's on the UN Turkmenistan Twitter feed, if anyone wants to go and see it, in which there are dozens of students all packed into this one room together, no masks, no distance between them, that's the United Nations. United Nations is you know, essentially abetting what may be a great lie by the Turkmen authorities. And I think it's really worrying when even the UN is kind of complicit in this kind of behavior.
Well, so what's next for Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, where our eyes should be to determine where things are headed going forward from here? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. Firstly, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Peter Leonard, Central Asia editor of the Eurasia Net, Rojettin Tolibov, managing editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service, locally known as Radio Ozodi, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi, I'm Mohamed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing COVID-19 in Tajikistan and Turkmenistan. So let's get back to Tajikistan, Rojettin. It's been a confusing couple of weeks, as you said. First, they appeared taking some measures in early days of COVID-19 outbreak and then relaxed them and then threw, as Peter said, a big Nowruz party. Now they are closing schools, quarantining villages. So at this stage, do we know what was happening behind the doors those days, which would explain these inconsistencies in terms of their behavior?
The health situation, overall, the medicine in Tajikistan is in an appalling situation. I would describe the situation in hospitals as a dare, where medics now are being told to buy protective equipment themselves. They're forced to pay from $12 up to $20, you know, it is 10-15% of their salary to buy protective equipment. I spoke to a doctor whom I know for many years, and he said that when these, you know, coronavirus cases started appearing on the media in the world, across the world, some doctors started getting their vacation or even sick leaves to avoid treating those who were infected, as they say, with pneumonia. And the Minister of Health has been working very hard to silence those who had questioned the official line. The authorities have blocked several independent newsrooms operating in the country, including Prague-based Akhbar.com. The handful of independent reporters still working very hard in the country, they say that they face enormous difficulties getting information from the government. So I think the lack of sources in the government, facilities, equipment, forced them to keep silence and to keep silent those who were daring to talk about this problem openly.
Peter, now that they are closing down schools and quarantining some hospitals or villages, and we also hear stories that signs of infections are seen in jails, where I'm going with this is like, is it too little, too late kind of situation that we are facing here? I mean, you were in Italy all these times when Italy was going through this outbreak. So from that standpoint of view, how do you see it? I mean, is it too late?
Well, referring to what Sirojuddin was saying about the lack of protective equipment, for example, I mean, there's a point to be made here that actually the international community has already pledged very considerable amounts of money. I mean, I don't have the figures at my fingertips, but we're talking about dozens of millions of dollars in either in-kind behind support even China and Russia and the EU and Aga Khan and UN. All of these donors have come in, given in-kind support, financial support, budget support, specifically to address this coronavirus situation. So actually, Tajikistan has struggled of late in recent years to get grants from these types of organizations, but the international community, I think, has stepped in and provided what seems to be sort of growing volumes of support. So as far as financial kind of war chest to fight this problem, you know, that is there in theory, but it's absolutely true. I am also hearing reports of doctors are being made to buy their own equipment, which just beggars belief, being made to work long hours and unsanitary, crowded hospitals, you know. So from that point of view, it is too late. But then again, we don't know the nature of the crisis as yet. We don't know the scope of it. But what we do know is that Tajikistan has been given, you know, a lot of kind of armory with which to combat this problem. But, you know, when the president comes out and says, he sort of tries to mollify this population by saying, in order to sort of provide our doctors with better conditions, we're giving them a three-month payment bonus. Mm. And that's supposed to kind of, you know, motivate them somehow. Collectively, the bonus is worth $1 million, right? So for 3 months, that's the premium payments. When the international community has paid, you know, dozens of millions of dollars so far is provided in aid. And you have to wonder, I mean, it beggars belief, but this may be yet another kind of opportunity for, you know, pulling the wool over the eyes of the international community, and money may well go missing. It really beggars belief that that could happen in this crisis, but I'm afraid there are already early signs, for me at least, that that may well in fact be happening. And so, you know, that suggests that, that there is, I think, no reason for the crisis to be catastrophic. Is going to be bad, but there's no reason for it to be catastrophic. But I think even at this late stage, they may contrive to mismanage it in such a way that it will indeed be horrific.
Other than mismanagement of possible mismanagement of funds, Bruce, speaking of the health sector of Tajikistan and the way they are kind of responding to it, I mean, do you see they are capable of handling this? If not, who is helping them at this stage?
Well, I mean, no, they couldn't on their own. No way. They wouldn't have the medical system to kind of deal with this. But, you know, they are getting a huge amount of aid. Even before they admitted that they had any cases, they were getting all this money that Peter was talking about.
Where are those money coming from, Bruce?
Well, like I said, you name the organization, certainly practically every international health organization, besides, you know, again, the UN, the OSCE, individual nations, the United States has given, like you mentioned, they gave aid to Turkmenistan, which Turkmenistan denied that they got or ever wanted. But, you know, they did to Tajikistan, too. They didn't just give aid to Turkmenistan. They gave it to everybody in Central Asia. And they continue to do that, you know. And I think the important thing about this is that the actual medical supplies they get are the big thing. Because as Peter rightly pointed out, giving them money is stupid. That's never going to work. You know, you almost have to give officials the actual medical equipment, which isn't saying it won't get sold somewhere else. But still, that's first need. But there's no way. Like I said, no country was ready for this. And the poorer you are, the less likely you're going to be able to deal with this.
Of course, we need to talk about Turkmenistan. But before we go to Turkmenistan, Sirojitin, one more question about Tajikistan. So now that the authorities admitted that there are cases in Tajikistan, did anything change the way they have been treating this pandemic since the confirmation of those cases?
So far, I haven't seen any signs. But in the regions, I can see the panic among the people. You can see less and less people in the streets, even in the chamber. But in the villages, people started wearing masks. The population overall is very concerned. So you don't see the traffic jams anymore. And people thinking about the future, because probably this is the biggest catastrophe as Tajikistan faced since the civil war. I think overcome these difficulties is going to be very difficult because medicine is very bad. The people don't have enough funds. Most of the people live from day to day, you know, and they live on the daily earnings. Imagine what happens if the government decides to announce a quarantine. I think officials in Dushanbe know very well that population simply is not ready for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we expect, you know, very hard, difficult days in front of us in the future.
If I may just add one thing, I mean, I think it's really important as well. I think we have to take our eye off the ball that this is not just a healthcare crisis. This is a food security crisis. An economic crisis. This is about four or five major crises are coming all together at the same time. This is remittances are going to go down. This is food security. This is, you know, the one thing that the president said in this kind of strange meeting that he had yesterday was he was kind of talking about, you know, agriculture and agricultural reforms and that we have to continue doing sowing. And, you know, I will say he's right about that, because if Tajikistan does not, you know, get its kind of food security agenda in good order in good time this year, there's not going to be a epidemic they're going to have to deal with. They're going to be actually dealing with starvation in the country, and Tajikistan has not seen anything of this nature for well over a decade, I would say.
Yeah,
that's good. Yes.
Yeah, probably that's going to be the discussion in our next podcast in terms of how they are going to come out of this crisis as a whole region. Tajikistan certainly doesn't look like good, given the migrant workers in Russia also out of job lately because of the situation in Russia. So, Bruce, Turkmenistan, is there any sign which would reflect that, though they remain in denial about the pandemic today, but it can hit the country tomorrow? Do you see any concern like that?
I'm not sure that's the right way to pose the question. I think the better way to look at this is, are they ready to manage this in terms of media to obscure any cases? They've come so far down the road, it's going to be hard for them to finally admit that there's cases. I think that there have been for a while in the country, and that you hear the same rumors coming out of Turkmenistan that you heard coming out of Tajikistan before they admitted it. Strain, you know, pneumonia, hospital, quarantined, whole families quarantined, things like that. We get the same stories. So it's probably there, but the government, like I said, they have such a hard time admitting to anything. Once they come up with a story, they stick to it all the time. And so, like I said, I think the big question is more, how are they going to keep using state media to deny that there's any kind of problem with this at all? The only way you could catch them and be sure is if they would allow independent, you know, inspections of hospitals and you know, independent diagnoses from foreign medical workers.
Which is never going to happen.
They can't do that.
Which is never going to happen. What you mean is that, yeah, they are in denial of that today, but they are also not taking any measures which would give you a hint that they are worried about tomorrow.
Well, I mean, you know, they have imposed internal travel restrictions. They've been taking a bunch, you know, disinfecting various public facilities, notably hospitals, but also schools. They have been taking some measures. And, you know, Peter mentioned they canceled flights like very early on. It was never easy to get in and out of Turkmenistan to begin with. And they actually locked that down tighter than it used to be. You know, they benefit in so many ways. The government, when it wants to keep control, benefits in so many ways from what might actually prevent an outbreak in Turkmenistan, is that the cities and towns are not close together.
Yeah.
The big cities are spread out around the country. So if there was an outbreak, it would be easy to contain it if they properly identified what the problem was.
And also
I'd be counting on that and news blackouts.
Yeah. And also, there was an interesting phone conversation between high-level State Department official and the Turkmen foreign minister. As per the statement, they were talking about Turkmenistan's role in the Afghan peace process or Turkmenistan's role in food security of Afghanistan. I don't know if Turkmenistan is in a position to play any active role in any of these topics, but anything more to it? I mean, this is also happening at the time when the World Health Organization's delegation coming to Turkmenistan. The timing kind of interesting. So what's the likely scenario? What's happening there?
Go ahead, Peter. Yeah, please.
I would just say, I mean, that there's something else to understand here. So whenever the president speaks to one of the foreign partners, be it the U.S. State Department or even the General Secretary of the United Nations just the other day, you know, usually all we get is the readout from the Turkmen side because, you know, the UN, for example, didn't issue a statement about the fact that he had spoken to the Turkmen president. Mm. And the way that the Turkmen state media always presents it, it's as though the Secretary General of the United Nations called up the Turkmen president, like to ask him for advice or something like that. I mean, that's always how the Turkmen state media represents it. So, you know, It seems to me that the international community, in the person of Guterres, and I think even the U.S. State Department, have understood that the only way you get any kind of policy implemented in Turkmenistan is you go over everybody's head and you speak directly to the number one guy. Because I strongly suspect that he simply does not know what's going on, and nobody has told him, and everybody is too terrified to tell him. And until he realizes there's a crisis or that there's a problem which needs to be contained, that nothing will be done. And that's, I think, unfortunately, the situation. Moreover, I mean, not only is he not doing anything to really seriously, I mean, there are sort of little sort of contained sort of countermeasures being applied, as Bruce alluded to recently. But I mean, as we're speaking, you know, the north of Turkmenistan is just kind of dealing with the aftermath of this kind of massive storm that's just kind of washed through and destroyed, you know, hundreds of homes and flooded whole areas, which is going to have all sorts of implications potentially for, you know, the sowing season, by the way, which is kind of coming in now. And, you know, that will then affect food security later on in the year. So there's this whole kind of cascade of problems that will also unfold in Turkmenistan. And whilst they're doing this, Turkmenistan is sending humanitarian aid to neighboring Afghanistan as though they don't need any help themselves. I mean, this is the situation we're dealing with. I mean, you know, there's nothing, unfortunately, useful one can say about it, but I think at the very least we can sort of diagnose the problem. And the problem is that nobody in that government is capable of telling their president the truth, and therefore nothing will happen.
On the top of
which
that,
real shame, because he was the former health minister.
So we don't know the full picture today, both in Turkmenistan and Tajikistan. But this is not something that can be concealed for a long time, Sirojiddin, on Tajikistan. So where your eyes will be to determine where things are headed going forward now that Tajikistan confirmed those 15 cases?
I think Tajik authorities must think carefully and find the proper approach how to deal with this problem. They have two options: either to take very strict measures and to announce lockdown throughout the country, across the country, or to have a more relaxed approach like in Sweden, not to announce any quarantine or lockdown, but to announce social distancing and to allow all, you know, big factories or plants to work, just close some big markets, food markets, clothing markets, but not food markets, to educate people through the mass media how to deal with this problem, to be very open and to talk about the problems that they face, including the victims, the number of infected, overall situation, and ask the international community to provide help. These are the two options. I think the second one will suit more to the reality in Tajikistan, and Tajik authorities must be wise and to make good judgment and to come to conclusion that may have a less negative impact on the society in the future.
Okay. Also, the same question to you, Peter. So where your eyes will be to understand first the size and scope of this problem, and also how Tajik authorities are coping with it. I mean, where you will be looking at to understand those scenarios as a journalist?
Well, I mean, for me, a priority, as I was kind of indicating earlier, it will be to really not take my eye off all of the correlated problems that will come out of this, because I think that there's a danger that we kind of fixate on the coronavirus problem, which is indeed a very great one. But in Tajikistan, there are many other kind of things that are going to flow out of that. And I think it'll be really important to kind of understand the ways in which the population is going to confront, you know, problems of unemployment, problems of food security, and so on and so forth. Not to speak of, incidentally, you know, obviously the lockdown situation all over the world has kind of had a very authoritarian kind of air about it. You know, I mean, we've all kind of more or less accepted these rules because we understand this is what's needed for our safety. But the concern has also been with that. I think you've discussed it in earlier programs that you know, that there may be kind of authoritarian practices that come along with this, and that they might kind of you know, freeze. And Tajikistan has already slid very far down in its kind of authoritarian practices. And I think there's really grave risk that those will only worsen in Tajikistan. So I think one thing that I want to kind of constantly remind myself of is that you know, the coronavirus is many other different types of crisis, and we must all kind of keep that in mind.
Okay, speaking of Turkmenistan, Bruce, so where your eyes will be there to understand the challenge there in the country and the way they are dealing with it.
Well, I mean, the good points are almost all taken here by Sarojuddin and Peter. But I would say, you know, and the same is true for Tajikistan. Both these governments have gone way out on a limb with this. You know, they denied they had any cases, and the things that they managed themselves invited the virus in. I imagine they're kind of banking on the fact that their populations are both very young. And generally speaking, young people don't die from this, although they can certainly get sick. And so, but if this gets so bad that they can't mask it, and it really turns out to be a health disaster, you know, it just undercuts any credibility in these governments whatsoever, you know, and which, again, they didn't have a lot of anyway. But, you know, I mean, they were saying they didn't have it. They were holding mass gatherings. And if all of a sudden one day you find out that these are end up being like the examples of what a bad management can lead to, you know, it's going to make things real tough on both those governments. I imagine the reaction would be to clamp down on society more than ever, which would be unfortunate. But so I'm watching for that to see if the cases actually spread beyond their ability to deny or control what's going on.
You know, in some other conversation that I was part of, I mean, someone also asking how many countries can really survive this. Maybe this is a topic for some other discussion. But with this, Bruce Panier, thank you very much. Bruce Panier is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Also, big thanks goes to Peter Leonard, Central Asia editor of the Eurasia Net, Srojitin Talibov, managing editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty's Tajik service. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast. So talk to you next week. Until then, bye-bye.